Jambo, fellow adventurers, this is Mike Dooley, and you are listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, welcome to the Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood. And yep, it's me. It's 2 a.m. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? What am I doing? Does the boy ever sleep? I don't know. Anyway, the reason actually it's 2:11. I just looked at the time. 2:11. It was my son's 16th birthday last night. Yesterday. And so we went out and had a blast together. It was fun. I can't believe 16 years since I cut that little cord on his belly button and changed his first diaper. Little tiny thing. Oh, dear. And anyway, so, but we started a big renovation on the house. And so we were gutting the place, just gutting it. And so we've ripped out the whole main floor. All the kitchen disappeared yesterday, first day yesterday. So it's going to be beautiful. I'm excited. I love renovations. I don't know why. I mean, I'm really busy right now with you know, with where we're going and what we're doing with the Amplified, our new brand. A lot going on, but I always say that, you know, you gotta design your life. And one of the things that you design, especially once you start, you know, you start attracting the kind of money that you really want, is the place where you spend your time, you know. And if you don't have money, just make sure you have a place that you go for your own sanity, somewhere that fills you up, that fills up your cup. And every single time, I mean, I traveled 52 countries, you know, actually 55 now, you know. And, but when I was backpacking for 10 and a half years, one of the things I prided myself on, and I remember this from Paris. I lived in Paris I had an office on the Champs-Élysées. And I love Paris so much, but my warehouse was up in Le Havre, which is in the north. And I think I've shared this story one time before on the show. And I remember going there and, you know, I had an unlimited expense account and I could have stayed anywhere I wanted. But what I did was I traveled the whole city until I found the perfect street where I wanted to spend time. And this street overlooked the ocean. It was high up on this cliff. And it overlooked the entry to the port. So these big ships would be coming in and out. And it's very, very high, so there's no noise. And what I did, I started one end of the street. I banged on doors and I simply asked, hey, do you have somewhere? Are you looking to rent somewhere, you know, in the house? And I think I got to about the eighth place, which is pretty much in the middle of the street. And the guy looked surprised. He said, it was funny. He said, within 2 weeks, we'll be finished. We just renovated the whole sort of basement. So I walked into this basement and there was this, it wasn't big, but everything was brand new and they had this massive big window that overlooked this beautiful scene that I love so much. And that's where I moved in. And that's what I feel right now. You know, whether you have money or not, you know, the ability to find somewhere rather than just get caught up in the busyness. And my guest today is somewhere, she calls herself a social entrepreneur and she's definitely an athlete. But what a beautiful, she lives in my hometown, and she's a real light. And when I was trying to think of a song to play just before I bring her on, I don't know why this particular artist came up. I think so. I think it's the passion. I think this artist represents for me, it's not someone I listen to a whole lot. I have seen her live. I've been to Vegas for her show. But there's something about the way she sings where I've watched her cry many, many times as she sang. And my guest has that type of, that depth of passion for life, that depth of passion for everything she does. You're just going to fall in love with her. And she was recommended by one of my closest friends. So it's a double whammy. Not just him. I was represented by a group of my closest friends. So it was really amazing that they all had such high regard. And totally, when they talked about her, they talked about her as if the show could have been built around her, as if she was the epitome of a kick-ass life. So the two artists are going to sing this song together. And I've seen them both live. And the other one I saw in New York. And I flew across from the west coast of Canada to New York just to see his concert. So I'll let them sort of introduce themselves through their words. And again, this is really a kudos to my guest, because I think her passion is represented by both these artists. So, and I'll introduce her to you in a moment. Here we go.
Let this be your prayer. When we lose our way, lead us to a place, guide us with your grace, to a place where we'll be safe.
La luce che tu dai,
I pray we'll find your light,
nel cuore resterà,
and hold it in our heart,
a ricordarci che
when stars
eterna stella sei nella mia preghiera.
Let this be our prayer.
Quanta fede c'è.
Wow. I want to take away two people who are so passionate about their art, their craft, for a person who truly is passionate about life. I want you to sit back, relax, and enjoy the beautiful Crystal Flamen. So welcome to the show. This is David recording live from beautiful Kelowna, British Columbia. And I have a fellow Kelowna-tarian. What do you call it? A Kelowna-tarian? I don't even know what the word is. But someone else from Kelowna. And you know what's amazing is when people come up to you and say things like, there's someone you have to meet. There's somebody you have to have on your show. And this was from a couple of my really, really close friends that have actually treated this lady in their clinic and heard her stories and seen what she's done in the world. And they are so excited about her. And now as I've started to get to know her, I feel the same way. So Crystal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, Crystal, I'm going to guess that you've never, ever been called a couch potato.
Well, only after a very long run.
So, I mean, I know you are a twin, which is kind of funny. So you have a twin sister, but it's like you are a twin because there are so many things that you've accomplished in your life and so many adventures you've been on, so many things you've been able to do with your body. Did you sort of start out one day like a little girl just saying, you know what, I'm going to be an ultra marathoner, or I'm going to run Ironman? How did that all start?
You know, I have 9 brothers and sisters, actually, and we grew up in Saskatchewan, lived on a farm, you know, what more can you say? But I grew up in this amazing family, just as one of the tribe. And, you know, it was really only when I moved to Kelowna, and I think we call ourselves lucky when we get to live in the Okanagan.
Mm-hmm.
And I just decided that that I wanted to try something new, and I got into running a few marathons, and then before I knew it, I found myself on the start line of an Ironman race, and the rest is sort of history. But the biggest thing I've sort of experienced is that the only thing that gets in my way is me, because, you know, if someone else says, oh, give that a try, I would go give it a try. But it took me about 4 years to get to the start line of my first Ironman race, just because I wasn't sure that I could do it, you know, and I think we all have those thoughts. But I never set out to be an athlete. I never set out to do anything like this at all. And it still amazes me that I'm doing this, even in the middle of doing these crazy, crazy athletic pursuits.
So
it blows my mind as well.
Just let people know, how old are you so people get a read on this?
I'm 43.
She looks good, man. I'm telling you, whatever she's doing is working, what I can see. But, you know, let's talk about it. You've done 11 Ironman, is that right?
Yes, 11.
11. That's crazy. I mean, but it's a crazy good thing. And what was the hardest part for you initially? Was it the swim?
You know, it was the swim, actually, because I never knew how to swim. And a friend of mine taught me how to swim in 2 weeks. And I'd signed up for the Apple Triathlon. And he said, I'll teach you how to swim. And for anyone who actually knows how to swim, you cannot teach someone how to swim in 2 weeks. So I started, I did that race and got to the start line of the Apple Triathlon. And my friend actually was, he was actually lying. He wasn't telling, you know, I asked him, I said, do you think I can do it? And he said, yes. The only thing is that he was lying because he didn't have the courage to tell me I'd never make it. But, you know, it's funny when that happens because I made the swim cutoff in 59 minutes and 32 seconds. And the cutoff is 60 minutes. So even when someone tells you they believe in you, even if they're lying, it works.
Yeah, it's really funny because I did the same Apple Triathlon, and yeah. I was the last out the water as well. I think my cutoff was about 47 seconds from cutoff because I couldn't swim, and I thought I was going to drown out there. You know, I learned to swim. I've done subsequent triathlons,
yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it is pretty. I mean, when you're out there and you're rounding the final buoy out in the middle of the lake there, and if the wind's licking up a little bit and there's all these other competitors. I mean, by the time I rounded the buoy, there wasn't many competitors in the water, but it is pretty daunting when you're in the water and there's a lot of people. Can you talk about that?
Sure. You know, it is daunting, and the splashing and the kicking and everyone's sort of trying to find their way. I think it can be overwhelming, but what I learned through subsequent races and through most of my Ironman races is to surrender to the process and just not to be fighting with it, not to be fighting against the other competitors, because we're all in this together. And basically just to smoothly, calmly go through the swim together. And I mean, people have broken their noses. People have, you know, you've heard all the stories about Ironman races. I mean, people have a lot of problems in the swim because they're fighting the process. But for me, surrendering to the process, being calm and really just having a lot of peace seems to work. And I get a great song in my mind and go from there.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds to me like a life philosophy there. And I know that I want to come to some of the other things you've done, but let's talk about the ultra marathon. I mean, 273K, I mean, that's a whole other level, isn't it? Or do you find that the sort of the discipline of Ironman really prepares you easily for an ultra marathon?
I think Ironman is a great philosophy for life. You know, it's about the discipline and the courage to step up and, you know, the training and the nutrition, of course. But the Grand to Grand Ultra, which I did a couple of months ago, it really was a big stretch for me. And nothing could have prepared me for that except for a lot of the mental kind of training. And I mean, physically, our bodies will do extraordinary things if we have the mental strength to not get in our own way and to not quit. So, I mean, there was a lot of physical preparation and a lot of learning. Like I carried all of my own food for the 7 days or for the 6 days, I should say. So you carry your own food, your sleeping bag, all your clothes in your backpack. So your backpack's about 20 pounds to start, or at least mine was. And the worst thing that happens is injuries, of course, but the mental breakdowns that happen, I'm sure you can imagine. It's crazy.
Mm. And so are you sleeping out there like in groups, or on that race, do you sort of find your own spot and, you know, roll up in a sleeping bag? How do you do that? Or do you just get to a station each night and sleep together?
Yeah, there's two types of races. One is called a nonstop race and the other is called a staged race. So in the staged races, everybody stops at the same place. So some people will obviously get there well in advance of others, but we all stop in the same place, and they usually have a fire and hot water because it's the desert, you know, and it's it was -5 to -8 at night, but +40 degrees Celsius in the daytime. So it was very, very hot and very, very cold. So we all slept in the same place together.
Now, do you remember, there's a story, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it's an old farmer, New Zealander, that entered a sort of an ultra marathon race that he didn't realize that that everyone was stopping at night, and he sort of shattered the record. This little old farmer, he was sort of, do you remember that story? Have you heard
that?
Do you remember his name?
You know, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but there's been articles written about him. There's been running, people have followed his gait, his style of running. And he is oh my gosh, he's an icon in the running industry, because you're right. People looked at him and he was actually wearing gumboots. He herded sheep for days on end, and that was his training. And everybody looked at him at first and was kind of laughing at him and mocking him. And And then later on, they were congratulating him. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it was, though, is and you talk about this surrender, and that's what fascinates me about your conversation and the joy in your voice. You have a beautiful joy in your voice of somebody who really is living life and sort of squeezing the juice out of life in a beautiful way. But with this guy, what happened was he didn't realize the rules. He didn't realize you had to stop. And so he just kept running all through the night, and he did that for 6 or 7 days, and he just shattered the records. And there's all these, ultra fit, strategic runners who could outrun him in a heartbeat. But so then the whole racing changed, because people started saying, well, do you have to stop? We thought you had to, otherwise you sort of die. And this guy just, again, because of what he didn't know. And I want to talk about that. Do you think that, when you see this idea of you surrendering in the water, and so many people struggling in a race because of what they think they know, how much does the mind play out in this type of race?
Oh, yeah. I'll get to your question in a second, but I think the gentleman's name is Cliff Young.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And they called it the Cliff Shuffle or something, didn't they?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But back to your question, I think there's a lot to be said for just surrendering to whatever is going on. And at least it works for me, because when I'm struggling against something, it's like going against the flow of the river, or that Taoist phrase, wu-wi, going against, it's the path of least resistance that we want to take. And so for me, sorry for stuttering, but I'm really only just going along this thing called life and kind of just being open with my heart and my mind. And so we sort of share whatever we're experiencing. And for me, surrendering has been a great one, not struggling or not suffering with whatever the current situation is, just sort of surrendering to the moment. And I would definitely agree that what I don't know is an asset, because, oh my God, if I actually knew what I was embarking on, whatever crazy adventure I was doing, I would never do it.
I know. The mind is such a trickster. And I love this. I taught a program one time called Beyond Courage. I did it a lot of times, but it's a program I've written. And the whole premise was resistance equals pain.
Yeah.
And that when we go with what's really happening in life, say you're in a car accident, so you can resist it and be upset and angry with someone, or we just go with it. Hey, we're in a car accident, and guess what? And you move through it. And we see that a lot obviously in your experience, you must have come across a lot of athletes who are, in wheelchairs. I know when I raced the Apple, the guy next to me was in a wheelchair, and he finished a minute apart, in the race. And this guy was just an amazing guy. But there are people who sort of wake up one day and, they lose their legs, or they have an accident, break their backs. And there are some people that just go with it. They wake up and life continues and it becomes even better. And there are some that struggle and get stuck and stop. Have you seen that a lot in your experience?
Oh yeah, I totally identify with what you're saying, because it's so true. You see those people that are just embracing every moment, no matter what it is, and then you see the people who are bitter and kind of angry and upset. And actually, I saw a lot of those people in the Grand to Grand Ultra that I just did, and you could see the ones that were struggling and suffering and angry and upset, and then you could see the ones that were just going through it with big eyes and big smiles. And for me, I'm really not an elite athlete. I have to say the most powerful asset I have is my mind. It's certainly not my physical ability. But getting through the race, I got to a certain point, and it was that moment of surrender. Because prior to that, the first day or two, I was kind of struggling, and like we all do, it's a new experience. And I got to this point on day three, and it was an 83-kilometer day through sand dunes, up and down sand dunes. So it's going to be a long day into the middle of the night. And I got to this point, and I was, now you're a guy, so maybe you've never done this, but have you ever seen a woman do the ugly cry?
I think I've done it.
So I found myself doing the ugly cry, not wanting to be there. And then within a few minutes,
Can you imitate the ugly cry so people who don't know what it is know what it is?
I'll just leave it up to their imagination, because they can do a better job with their own imagination. But so I found myself doing the ugly cry, sniveling and crying, it's like almost hyperventilating.
One of those?
Exactly. You're pretty good.
I told you, I do it all the time.
So. But in that moment, all of a sudden, I started laughing hysterically. And it was that moment of surrender. And all of a sudden, here's this girl, back of the pack, you know, Joe average. And all of a sudden, I had this fire in my eyes and mostly a fire in my spirit. And people started saying, you know, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know. And I think they call it the zone. You know, I think they call it that athletic kind of focus. And basically, I just was gonna be there, taking every bit of it in, you know, pain, joy, cold, heat, you know, everything. And it was amazing to see these other athletes who were obviously much better than me in every way. And they didn't surrender. They were basically just struggling along. And so I learned a great deal about life and about myself by pushing my limits. And I think we all do, you know, when we push our limits to the max, we discover what we're truly made of.
Mm, yeah. I think most people don't even understand the parameters of their limits it's just something that a lot of people don't do. They'll stand up each day and think, you know what? There's a mountain in front of me, let's climb it. Or there's a race, or there's something that really can allow me to discover that next level. I want to talk about something you did with your sister, because I think it's a beautiful, I'm not sure how early this was in your sort of evolution as this extraordinary athlete that does these amazing adventures. And that's what I feel about you. It's not like you're just doing a race. It feels to me like you're off on an adventure and your smile. And again, we're just getting to know each other, so I'm assuming a lot, but I mean, obviously I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. So it's kind of, it's easy to pick up little cues. But this race with your sister, or not the race, the ride across Canada on a tandem bike with your twin sister, was that early on in your sort of start off?
Yeah, it was in 1994, and my twin sister and I had finished, we'd graduated from university, and our mom had open heart surgery 2 years prior. So we spent the last 2 years in university, not really going to school, you know, but raising funds, planning our trip, and we called it the Dare to Discover Tour. And our goal was to raise $1 million for the Heart and Stroke Foundation. And I got to say, you know, we just got lucky in so many ways, twins on a tandem with big smiles, you know, it was a really good gimmick. And we ended up raising about $500,000 going from Victoria to Newfoundland. And the tandem had never crossed the country before. Obviously, we know Terry Fox had been across and many others had been across, but a tandem had never been across. So we chose a tandem for a number of reasons. Number one, because we wanted to do it together. And I think we're so competitive as twins can be that, heck, there's no way one of us is going to be, you know, off on their own bike. So we decided to go together, but on the tandem. And it was a life-changing experience for sure.
How about your friend? I mean, like, did you fight? I mean, did you become? I mean, what was some of the darker times on a journey like that? Because obviously, your sisters and it's all that old stuff. I mean, you have like, you know, thousands of hours. Not thousands, but you have. How many days did it take?
It took us 93 cycling days, and we did a lot of PR, so a lot of school talks about health and making better choices. We did a lot of media work, and obviously we were raising money for charity. So the darker moments were walking up the Rockies, because a tandem is so much heavier, so you really can't go up hills very fast. And we took turns every day on the front and the back. And walking up the Rockies it took forever. And then the province of Ontario was enormous. The black flies literally almost killed us, because these little bites, it was these little day-to-day moments.
The no-see-ems. This show goes out to 200 countries. I mean, these things are completely invisible, and they have teeth like piranhas.
Yeah.
And they get into places that flies should never, ever visit.
Totally. You know, the little things became frustrations, and we spent a lot of hours on the bike not talking, and I think that's okay. We had, back then it was Walkmans or Discmans, and so we listened to music a lot, but I wrote a journal, and my twin sister did not write a journal, but we would compile it kind of together, and the journal really tells a great story about sisterhood and fighting and love and, you know, kind of all of it mixed up together, because there were days when we wish we could have torn the bike in half, but obviously then we wouldn't be going anywhere. So it was certainly an experience that changed our lives tremendously just because we did it together. And I think that's what it's about in life, you know, doing it together.
I love the sound of it. You know, before I get to one of your deep, deep, deep passions, which is the room to read, which I really want to spend some time talking about. Tell me about your hostel, because I've driven past your hostel, I don't know, 1,000 times, 2,000 times. And there's something about it. I don't know why I've never been in. I mean, I backpacked for 10 and a half years around the world, you know, and 42 countries. So hostels always have this, not that I spent a tremendous amount of time in hostels, but certainly there's lots of times I did. And all the stories of the people I met, and typically hostel owners have a very special thing about them. I mean, the very nature of having these travelers wander through their life, you know, and typically you get pretty close to some of them and then they're gone, right? But talk about, how did you start a hostel and how's that been?
Oh, you know, back when I was 25, it was 17 years ago, and we literally drove by one day, and I had worked for the Business Development Bank, which is a lending institution for small business, and I was looking for a change. You know when your heart just isn't bursting, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't...
Listen to her talk. I want everyone to just take that in. You know when your heart isn't bursting. You know, that is a concept that most people can't grasp. I get it. I just want to make sure people get it. You know, that life should be about your heart wanting to burst, because you're talking about this excitement, this neum for life, right?
Yeah. And so I was pretty down, you know, kind of doing the ugly cry. And
that's twice.
Yeah, exactly. And so, well, there's been a lot more times than that, I got to tell you. But I wasn't really fulfilled. And I thought there must be more to life than this. And we drove by the building one day, and it was for sale, but it was quite a transient location. It was a rooming house. It wasn't actually a hostel, although it had the right zoning. And so I thought, you know, I could do that. And if I can't travel, you know, nonstop, then I'd like to own a hostel and be around travelers. So we just found ourselves, you know, got the mortgage and kind of, it just sort of fell into place. And when things are meant to be, they just will be. And so we found ourselves, it's February 12th, 1998, moving into this rundown, dilapidated boarding house. And we lived there for a year. And you know the movie Field of Dreams?
Yeah. Build it and they will come.
Yes. And that was the mantra that I had in my mind for about 6 months straight. And so, you know, it took about 6 months to fix it up. And after 1 year, we moved out to a tiny little house across the street. And then I began to hire travelers. And I must say that travelers run the hostel. I don't actually run it. I'm kind of busy doing a lot of other things and a lot of other kind of passions and consulting. But I only hire travelers because it's part of my philosophy. And these travelers have continued to make the hostel flourish over the years. And I mean, I'm always there in and out kind of every day or two or three. But
you don't live there anymore.
Oh, God, no. We lived there for the first year and that was enough.
Okay.
But, you know, it's the happiest place on earth. The slogan of the hostel is living the dream. And celebrating our 17th birthday was the other day, actually, February 12th. It was a great reminder. And I put a note out on Facebook just to say thanks so much to everyone over the years. And there were over 100 responses. So it to me, I think when we're following our passion and when we're, I don't know, when my heart is bursting, it affects other people and it makes a difference. And I think that's what we're all really here to do.
Well, that leads beautifully into, you know, the creator of Imagine the Ripple Effect and the inspiring tin of wisdom. Now, you need to, I mean, obviously I get from you, I could almost talk about this without even knowing what it is, but talk about the ripple effect.
Oh, well, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory. And I think that we all want to be that rock that gets thrown into the water and creates a ripple effect. And ultimately, and this is what I've kind of figured out in my own path, if I'm sharing my gifts and talents, whatever they might be, and it sounds so boring, but my greatest gift and talent, that my innate reason and purpose for being here is to move physically. And I did this exercise, and if you want, I'd love to share it with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
Basically, it's It's from the Inventure Group, and that's inventuregroup.org, I think. I'm not sure, but I can get the information to you offline. And ultimately, you go through this little deck of cards, and you discover your innate talents and gifts. And it sounds so boring, but my biggest talent is moving physically. That's my purpose, my passion. And I was so disappointed because it wasn't unique or different or exciting, I thought. However, it is very exciting. It really is my calling. And I find that I'm able to create a ripple effect in the world around me by simply moving physically and by sharing that with other people, because it makes them follow their own, you know, passion. But the ripple effect is basically, you know, random acts of kindness. And I made these little cards, and it's the exact same concept, obviously, as random acts of kindness. But I thought, you know, we should package this and get, you know, create an opportunity for people to do whatever they do in their world, whether it's buying a coffee for the car behind them or whether it's sharing whatever their purpose is, because that will inspire others to do the same.
It's funny, we're launching a whole program around this for our brand Amplified. So I'm going to get you to come in and have a little look around and see if you want to add something to it, because I think you really could. So we'll have a chat offline about that if you're open.
Okay.
The ripple effect. I mean, I love that. There was something I used to teach years ago, which was, you know, when somebody lives their purpose and finds and discovers and lives their purpose, and they're let's use your term, I love it, you know, their heart begins to burst. That there's an impact on about 10,000 other people will be impacted to raise their life to that kind of level. They'll be inspired to discover their own purpose. And that's the importance of that ripple effect. I mean, and there's a lot of science behind it. It's pretty amazing, eh?
It really is. And I mean, just from a personal perspective, if we're happy and we're sharing what we're here to share, we're healthier. You know, we're more motivated. We're like, we have lower stress in our lives. And so I think the ripple effect in our own lives is, you know, incredible just by following the right path that we're supposed to be here to follow.
And I'm imagining the tin of wisdom is the cards, right?
Yeah, the tin of wisdom is something different.
Well, let me hear about the tin of wisdom.
The tin of wisdom.
Oh, grasshopper, tell us about the tin of wisdom.
the tin of wisdom has about 7 different lines. So basically, it's just a inspiring thought of the day. And it started out, I'll make it really quick, but it started out by just being this thing that I basically took these cards, I made them up, and they just had little inspiring thoughts. And, you know, inside, I'm actually very introverted, and no one would know it, but I really am. But I have to go and speak at a lot of conferences and events and around the world, and I get really shy. So I developed these little cards that basically are just little thoughts for the day. And I would go around, and when I had to meet people, I'd say, okay, take 2, 1 to keep, 1 to give away. Keep the one that speaks to you and give the other one away to someone who you think needs it or wants it. So I've said this thousands of times. And sometimes people will go, oh, okay. And then I know I don't really want to talk to them because they're not into the same stuff. And so then other people will just love it. And so in one particular moment, a lady said, well, how many different phrases or words are there? And I said, well, I don't know. There's about 75. And she said, well, I want them all. And I thought, oh, okay. So I just gave her my whole handful. And then she said, but don't you give these or sell these? And I said, no. I said, it's like my little crutch. And she said, oh, you need to package them up. And so the tin of wisdom was born. So basically it's a thought for the day. You just pick a thought every day. And then someone said, you know, at a different time, someone said, well, do you have some for kids? So I thought, well, let's make them up for kids. Do you have a little tin for teachers or for athletes or for moms? And so we developed this entire line just based on inspiring thoughts for the day.
How does someone find that? I know we didn't talk about this before the show, but is there a way if someone can get, if they want to get hold of that?
For sure, actually. My website is just being redone to encompass all these different things, but they can actually go to my website or they can send me an email, and it's inspiringsuccess.ca.
Inspiring success. We'll have that in the show notes as well, everyone. Inspiringsuccess.ca.
Yep. And my email is just crystal at inspiringsuccess.ca.
Awesome. Now, obviously, there's one other thing I want to talk about before we get to the room to read. This idea of seven different themes, the 90-day intentional living of wisdom, the seven different themes for this 90-day intentional living challenge, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Simple ideas to live a long, healthy, and happy life. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that as well?
Oh, yeah. You know, we share what we most need to learn. At least that's my perspective. And sometimes I can be so excited about life and have a million things on the go, and having so many ideas is actually kind of a challenge because I need to bring them to fruition. I hope I'm not the only one in the world that, you know, suffers from this affliction.
No, I'm guilty as charged, Your Honor.
Yeah. So it's I basically made this little workbook for me. So it comes down to having to do three small actions towards whatever my goals might be. So over the course of a day, you do three small actions towards your goals or your dreams or whatever you've chosen. And over the course of a month, that would be 90 small steps towards your goals. And over the course of 3 months, 3 months is actually a really good time frame because it's long enough, but it's not too long. When I look at a year, it's way too long. So the 90-day intentional living challenge is an opportunity. It was really just for me, but then other people wanted it as well. And so over the course of 90 days, that would be 270 actions towards your goals or your dreams. And I can only imagine the conversation we could have in 90 days from now if we had 270 small actions towards our goals. So it's a little workbook, and I'm happy. I would love to share it. It's a tiny little workbook, and it's a place to be accountable to actually following through on the things that we want to follow through on.
Lovely. And again, for somebody who's done so many hard and challenging adventures with your body and your mind, these little steps, I'm sure this is born in the realization of this is how you've succeeded with everything you've done, right?
Oh, and yes, exactly. It's based on all of my experiences, and I don't really know how I could share anything else, you know, otherwise I would just be regurgitating someone else's information. So for me, these are just little things that have helped me in my life. And if they help other people too, that's fantastic. And it seems like we're all in this together, you know, we're all really side by side. And it's funny how whatever you're feeling, probably I'm feeling it too in some way.
Mm. You know, you could easily be the nicest person I've ever interviewed. Yeah, you have to be careful here. You're going to be getting the top spot of someone who just oozes kindness. I love it. And I've interviewed some pretty beautiful, kind, amazing, you know, people. I've done incredible things in the world. But you just, every cell, I can hear it popping as you talk. It's awesome. I was actually coaching a guy in Australia. And he used a term which I know you use, and I haven't heard it very often, and that's why it strikes me as something we should talk about. He talked about, you know, moving from success to significance. And I know that, you know, that's a philosophy of yours about, you know, sharing your talents and, you know, really listening to intuition and to sort of squeezing, you know, the juice out, I call it, but, you know, finding true joy, happiness, and satisfaction. Do you want to talk about that journey from success? Because I think a lot of people who listen to this show are on the way to success. You know, the reason they listen, the reason they tune in, I say 200 countries, we have over 1 million downloads. But there's a lot of people listening that really want something. There's something about the resonance of this type of information and listening to people like yourself that is calling them to success. But the journey from success to significance, can you talk a little bit about that?
For sure. You know, I think it's a journey that we're all on, again, side by side. And I think success is a natural goal. It's a natural thing that we all want to achieve. However, I actually don't think it's very fulfilling. And significance is really what we want. And it's about making that journey, you know, that we can go around the world easier than we can go from our heads to our hearts. It's the longest 18-inch journey of our lifetime. And it's what we spend a lifetime doing. And so for me, I think I spent my 30s or most of my 30s wanting to attain success, you know, financial security, those kinds of things. And then once I sort of got there, well, I mean, we're I mean, we always want, you know, we always want to achieve more, but I woke up one day and thought, this isn't what I want. I want to be significant. And I think we all want to feel significance in our lives. And that really is about making a difference. And the journey of moving from our heads to our hearts, from success to significance, I think that that's where fulfillment lies. That's where joy lives. And that's where happiness, health, you know, abundance really thrives.
Mm. And quite often, I mean, for a lot of people when they get there, I mean, as far as wealth, if we combine that with it, as not saying you can't have both, but you absolutely can have it all. You can have absolute joy and absolutely living with passion and purpose, and you can have create financial wealth because of that. And because, I mean, obviously there's a magnetism or there's a draw that people have around you, right?
Oh, yeah. You just said it best, actually. You know, it's about that wealth, and it's really about the passion and purpose, because it brings meaning to whatever it is that we're doing. When our goal is not simply success, but rather significance, it really brings meaning and purpose, which you've just said.
Mm, love it. Let's talk about your charitable work, because obviously you've raised, and you'd have to tell me the numbers, but you know, there's a lot of charities that have benefited from your you know, your efforts and the care that you put into the world. I mean, villages in Guatemala. I mean, I know the Heart and Stroke Foundation. Obviously, you talked about that with your mom. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, just focusing some attention of our life on contribution in that way? And then let's get into the Room to Read organization, because I really want to find out more about it.
Sure. You know, I must say that I've learned a lot of these things from my parents. So growing up, and I really have them to thank, my mom is truly the kindest person I know. And my dad is the most creative, entrepreneurial person that I know. And somehow I was blessed with, you know, having the best of both of them. And I've always been a social entrepreneur. I mean, even when I was in university, I was always planning some crazy adventure that had a philanthropic side to it. So I think that we all want to make a difference in some way. And for me, I don't actually have my own children. So I thought, if I don't have kids of my own, I can make a difference in the lives of other children. And so through the profits of my businesses and through other things, and it really must be noted that I don't really do anything alone. You know, there's always a team of amazing people, and it's quite exciting to raise funds for charity and do things together, but I'm not to receive the praise alone, because it's always been a great team effort. And so Room to Read is a charity that I've chosen because I think they're fiscally responsible. They do great work and they're just quite remarkable. And it was started by a guy by the name of John Wood, and he left Microsoft to change the world and wrote a book about it. So he started Room to Read after a trip to Nepal and noticed that there were no books in the little village schools that he was trekking through. So it's a great book, Leaving Microsoft to Change the World. And I read that book and it literally changed my world about 7 or 8 years ago. And so since then, we've built, with the proceeds of from the hostel and some of my other work, we've built 3 schools in Nepal, and I have yet to go and see them, but it's quite exciting that they're there. So thousands of kids are getting an access to education through travelers that have come through and different things like that. But the biggest thing I think is that if we can just find a way, whatever it is that we're excited about in our life, and find a way to kind of feed that through whatever our career is. So it's not really what we're doing that matters, it's the spirit in which we're doing it. And for me, Room to Read has kind of been my sort of chosen charity, but it doesn't matter what it is, you know, it's just about finding a cause greater than ourselves.
It's interesting though, when you look at, we've done a lot of work in Africa and different places around the world, but when you look at education and the ability to read and you look at the stats, and again, yeah. I'll use Africa as an example because I'm more familiar, but I understand this is the case in many, many third world countries,
yeah.
Is just the fact of educating, especially women, You know, the abuse goes down, early marriage goes down, early pregnancy goes down. I mean, so much impact on the community at large, and so many things that are really, really devastating for young women because they simply lack the education. So this idea of giving them a book and really allowing them to grow and learn has such a massive impact throughout their whole lifetime. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Or
sure, you're exactly right. Actually, you're so right. It's actually painful because when we don't educate a girl, then subsequently she will have children younger, but they will not be educated either. And then the community itself lowers it goes down in every way. But when we educate a girl, she will educate her kids. And then we educate a generation. So it's not that educating, I mean, we need to educate boys as well. But if you educate a boy, he will become a man and be educated. It's just the way culture is. But if you educate a girl, she will teach her children and she will make better choices, having children later, doing all kinds of things that are better for her own life and better for that of her community and the world. So it's what you say, you know, is true in Africa and all over the world. By creating leaders of tomorrow, we just must educate them.
Mm. And I mean, even AIDS, I mean, they were saying that, you know, even that simple act of educating a woman or a young girl, you know, the incidence of AIDS in her village will go down dramatically. I mean, and it comes from, you know, somebody having the courage here to join you on your cause with Room to Read. Now, I want to give them a place to go. I know with your website, they're going to be able to find that once it's up and running. But, rather than send them to Room to Read website, would it be better for them to just contact you so that you could mobilize them in some form of force, or should we just send them straight to the Room to Read website?
No, I would love to hear from any of your listeners. It would be an honor to find out a little bit more about them and maybe what their sort of focus is, because I think that by collaborating together, we can achieve extraordinary things. So yes, please send them to my website or my email address, which is crystal@inspiringsuccess.ca.
Yeah.
And I'd be happy to. I mean, Room to Read is just one fabulous charity that I think is quite extraordinary. But, you know, for someone else, it might be a little bit different. And I certainly wouldn't want to impart my views on someone else. Mostly what I would want to do is somehow create an opportunity or a conversation where we can connect and they discover, you know, what it is that makes their heart burst open.
Because I do a lot of philanthropic work as well, you know, one of the things I found is that, you know, and people listening right now, you may have a particular charity that you follow due to, for example, with Crystal's mom, you know, having heart problems when she was young, you know, they did a lot of work for Heart and Stroke Foundation. So typically we're sort of driven into a particular charity because of something that's occurred in our family or we've witnessed or something has impacted us. What I say is, you know, is that if you can look at that area and continue doing the work there, and all you do is open the window or open the door just a little bit wider and say, you know, I can do this and let me help Crystal or join arms with Crystal. Because if a lot of people join together and do a little tiny bit, it doesn't distract you from what you're doing on the one charity, but it allows a lot of people to come together and join arms. And that impact of many, many people doing a small act can truly, truly change the world in a significant way. Wouldn't you agree with that, Crystal?
Oh, I think you're right. It's the only thing that ever has, hasn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Small little acts of, I think Margaret Mead said it best. And it's true. These small little things, these are the things that change the world when we kind of group together and when we can hold hands together. And it's so exciting even to have this conversation. I'm so grateful and honored to be here with you because it's so inspiring for me to just imagine what's possible when we can actually connect with one another.
Well, you know, you really should have your own show. I think you'd have millions of people jump in, and it's such a beautiful platform. I can't believe, you know, well, you can see where I'm sitting, but sitting here in Kelowna and knowing that some girl in Uganda could be listening to this, and some of the most obscure countries where you think, really, there's internet there? I didn't realize that. You know, it's just bizarre. And you can see that, you know, how, you know, 200 countries is a lot of countries to have some penetration in, right? So I think you'd be a wonderful host of a show.
Ah, well, you know what? I'm just so grateful that you've considered me. And it's funny how when you go through life and our paths cross with one another, and you know, there's that great line that says, you know, people meet for a reason, a season, or a lifetime, and you just never know where it takes you. And so, like for me, I would love to hear from any of your listeners on anything. And if people are kind of struggling what is their purpose? What is their calling? If you want to pass along my email address to them, in about 3 minutes, they will clearly know what it is that they are called to do in this world.
Hey, that's a challenge for you. Who wants a 3 minute call? You're gonna have like 200, 300 calls of people. Let me ask.
It's an activity. They have to do it.
Yeah. I got it. Now, let me ask you a question. And I want to leave that one so people will call you. So I don't want to, normally I would ask you to give that away on the show. And so people can hear it. Now there's one way to think about this too, right? Is there are some people who don't have access necessarily to internet. And so they're listening to this through a radio, through Stitcher or something like that. But let me ask you a question. You've mentioned a couple of really beautiful quotes, and you've mentioned a really, really beautiful book. Is there any resources like that, any books, other books you've read that have had a real impact on you? And are there any quotes that you have around your home or hang up or things that you think about a lot that really keep you on track? Is there anything you can share along those lines?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites, obviously, well, two I'd love to share with you. One, and I don't, forgive me, I don't know who it's by, but it says that we are each of us angels with only one wing, and it's only by embracing one another that we're able to fly. And I think of that every day, because if I can put my arm around somebody and help them along, they help me along too. And the other one, and this is kind of personal because it will be, it's just me though, and I think by nature, I'm a little insecure deep down inside, and the quote by Marianne Williamson, our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. That's my favorite quote, because I need to remind myself to shine brightly, and for those of you who haven't heard the quote, it goes something like this. Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Your playing small doesn't serve the world. And it goes from there. But I think that's a great message for everyone who might be listening, is that your playing small doesn't serve the world. You were born, to shine really brightly.
Yeah. It's interesting, that the... I use that. I write a lot of different types of programs, and it's at the end of one of my programs, I do an exercise with candles to really demonstrate to people about their own light and the importance of having their own light on so that they can impact the world. And I think, when you look at that that particular quote, she talks about, it's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. I think that that's such a For many people listening right now, and what I feel from you is that beautiful light that you just sort of exude, and the importance of that. And and I think the end of the quote goes something like this. It says, and as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fears, our presence automatically liberates others.
Exactly.
And that's the courage to step into an authentic life and step into the moment. And like you say, I think we started the call with the word surrender, in surrendering to this journey that is, it is a divine journey, and each one of us are a miracle. And I think, it's very, very easy to lose sight of that when we get caught up in the everyday stuff, right?
I think so too. Just listening to you say, share your words, if we could just breathe that in, our life would be different today.
Anyway, like a couple of books that you want to leave people thinking about, something they can pick up. You just shared a really great one, but is there with John Wood, but is there another book or two that you've read recently that, or even in the past, that started this journey?
I'm an avid reader, it's like Friday night, there's nothing better than a good book, but I would say, there's just so many, One that really changed my life in terms of the importance of nutrition and exercise was called Spark, The Revolutionary Science of Exercise in the Brain. And for anyone that's wanting to get a little more healthier, and that was a profound book for me, just kind of on a nutritional kind of scientific basis. Another really good book that I loved and that was also so impactful was called... The Intention Experiment.
Mm.
It's another really good one by Bruce Lipton, The Biology of Belief. And these are books that, I mean, out of 1,000 books in my library, these are ones that sort of come to mind just off the top of my head. Another one by Greg Braden, I think, is called The Matrix. Mm. And these are just books that that I probably have 300 sticky notes or lines or scribbles in them, you know? But The Intention Experiment was one that really opened my eyes to what we don't see. You know, it's all about our intention and how that's actually real. Even though we can't see it, it has a profound effect on our lives. So what we think we really do become.
That's amazing. These are great. And but because we're at the sort of the end of the show here, I just want to sort of hand it back to you. I always think that there's probably a question I didn't ask that I could have asked, or maybe there's just a something you want to leave people with from you to them. But is there a question that I could have asked you that you maybe would have loved to have answered?
Well, first I have to say you are the greatest interviewer ever. I would probably say when things are going not quite right for me, when I'm frustrated or struggling, I think of 4 questions. And for anyone else who has those moments of frustration, maybe these following 4 questions might help you. Number 1 is, what am I putting into my body? Number 2 is, what am I putting into my mind? Number 3 is, what am I doing with my body? And number 4, am I sharing my innate gifts and talents? So whenever I use it as a litmus test, and whenever things aren't going 144%, because I kind of set the bar high, whenever things aren't going exactly how I want them to, I come back to those 4 questions. And somewhere I've gone off track on one of those 4 questions. And for me, that's hugely helpful. But the other thing I would love to leave people with, and I know it's something that we've all heard about over the, you know, the last few years, but it's really works for me. And it's really just to be grateful. And I started a gratitude journal, and it has a profound impact on me. It's it has anyway for me, and maybe it would for others, I don't know. But having a gratitude journal to me has changed my life immeasurably, because it opens my eyes and my heart and my spirit to the small and large things that I have in my life to be grateful for. Mm. And the list could go on and on endlessly. We just don't have enough time in the day to write down all the things that we could possibly be grateful for once we sort of stop and take a look. So that would be the biggest thing for me. And again, I never would want to tell someone else what to do or how to do it. But these are just things that I'm kind of doing in my own life. And they seem to be creating a little bit more sparkle in my eyes and in the world around me as well.
Mm, and allowing your heart to burst.
Yeah.
You know, what am I putting into my body? What am I putting into my mind? What am I doing with my body? And am I sharing my innate gifts? I mean, that's such a beautiful way to sort of look at and just check whenever you're a little bit off rails, you know. And I think each one of those will really pull you back in. And I totally agree, Crystal. I mean, we practice gratitudes in our home every day after every meal. I mean, it's a focus. And I think it's one of those things that we can do. Where, you know, when you're having a crappy moment, which some, you know, you move into a crappy moment, you know, the only way to pull yourself out is to start looking at what we're grateful for. And it's just an immediate sense of release of just making the small things small and making the important things big, right?
Exactly. And then all of a sudden the world just seems to help you get what you really need and want, you know?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I'm so glad you live in town, because I'm going to make it an absolute determination of mine that we hang out, and we have an amazing group of friends, some of them you already know, and we throw some beautiful parties, and so I'm going to make sure you're a part of that if you're open, and then I'd love to talk about some of the visions for our brand, and I think that there's many things that we can collaborate on, so it'd be awesome.
Oh, it would be such an honor, and again, my huge thanks and total gratitude for having me on your show.
Wow. I told you. Oh my goodness. How beautiful. How beautiful. You know, just somebody who really lives in her body and lives in the world. Crystal, I know we spoke after the show and talk about our friendship and our commitment to growing that friendship. So I can't wait to have you over, and and break some bread and drink some wine and just talk about life. So thank you so much. Everyone, before I play a song that I truly feel that represents Crystal's passion and really one of her quotes, which I think is so beautiful, just remind you that I will be in Australia for the month of May. Three programs there, one in Sydney, one in Perth, one in Brisbane. And they're going to be amazing programs. If you're open, you're interested, please join us there. If you have friends there, let them know. And you can go to amplifiednetworkmarketing.com/events. And don't forget, there's Amplified Island Adventure. I think we have one spot left for July. And so, and do me a favor, share the show. Share the show with people. Don't forget, I've launched a brand new show, Amplified Network Marketing, specifically to help people with the vehicle, because so many people want to kick ass live, and so many people got hold of me and said, look, yeah, I want it, but I need a vehicle. And I know that to be true. So, again, even if you think the whole industry of network marketing sucks, I want you to listen to 4 or 5 shows and let me help you understand it at least come from a position of power. Because if you don't have in your life your things you want and your heart's not full, you're not living a kick-ass life because of your circumstances and because of your J-O-B, then there's something you don't know. And if you're not wealthy, which I think is everyone's birthright, then there's something you don't know. So just listen. It's not going to cost you anything to listen. It's free. So amplifiednetworkmarketing.com. I have been given away, and we just did our first one, by the way, a free one-on-one coaching session with me. And the way to win that coaching session, we just had the first winner, and I just on the show, and it's been launched, so you can listen to it if you want. So you get on the show. I'll coach you live on the show if you want to, on any area of your life. It doesn't matter whether it's about money, whether it's about network marketing, whether it's about relationships. It doesn't matter. Adventure, whether, I don't mind. The philosophies of a kick-ass life. I can help you in so many areas. And we can get you on the show. The way to do that is to leave a review on either show, The Kick-Ass Life or Amplified Network Marketing, or both. And if you leave a review on both, we will put your name into a hat, and I will keep that name in the hat. So every month when we draw, your name will stay there. If you don't win, your name stays in the hat. We had the first one, Debbie, and you can find that show if you want to listen to me coaching live. Debbie Donaldson and myself, that was last week. Just go to the amplifiednetworkmarketing.com and you'll see that it's called one-on-one, and you'll listen to me coach her. And it was all about her belief systems and what was holding her back. So again, but I want to get back to Crystal. I do not want to end this show on just letting you know what's going on, but obviously it's important that I do. Her quote, "We are each of us angels with only one wing, and we can only fly by embracing one another." It reminded me of a song by Sarah McLachlan. And here we are, just listen to this.
Some peace tonight in the arms of the angel. Fly away from here, from this dark, cold hotel room and the endless night.
So as we wrap up the show, I want you to think about Crystal's work, Crystal. Sort of her philosophies and the way she attaches herself to life and really embraces and allows herself to become a beacon of light in so many ways. And her words, maybe you listen to the show again and think about yourself, the impact you can have in the world once you step into this kick-ass life. So Crystal, thank you so much, and we'll definitely see you on the other side.
So tired of the straight line, and everywhere you turn, there's vultures and thieves at your back.
That was kick ass.